hear it for Devin.
No problem. Good evening, everybody. My name is Devin, and I am an alcoholic. I am incredibly pleased to be here. Love coming to new meetings. This is my first time at this meeting, which I wasn't sure of, but then walked in the room, and I was like, feels fresh. I do. I was told about the format, right? There's a lot going on, as there is with all of us. Happy to be here because it's different for me. My Sundays, especially this time of year, are big time football. I'm stuck in front of the TV from probably 10 a.m. getting ready for fantasy stuff until midnight, until the last game's over, which means that coming here for 3 weeks straight is precisely what I need, right? Switching up the routines and getting a little bit out of the comfort zone is exactly it. And I'll be perfectly honest, 3 weeks in a row is a little bit getting out of the comfort zone, and an hour is also a little bit out of the comfort zone. But there's something that that makes me feel honored there for that opportunity to have arisen. So I thank the folks that allowed that to happen, and look forward to getting it kicked off. So the thought process for me is, right, I'm going to do just because it is, and I am, I'm calling it my residency for my acquaintances and folks. It's like I have a 3-week residency in a meeting in Westfield. So to kick it off, I'm going to do just a relatively brief introduction that I'd like to tie into parts of Bill's story, and there is a solution about what my drinking looked like, how I began to have folks arm me with facts about myself, right? Understand what was going on, when it started to kick in completely externally for me, that there was a problem, what that problem looked like, what was really going on, because until I understood that, right, and tremendous emphasis on the way that I came to understand that, not being sitting alone, even reading the book, that did not do it for me. Tried that not as many times as some, I'm sure, but plenty of times. And it took another alcoholic or a group of alcoholics sitting across from me and in the same room as me to explain what was going on, to put the words that I was reading, make them make sense to me and relate to my experience. So with that, I'll kick it off quick, right? I'm originally from Rochester, New York. The real New York, as I like to call it. When I moved here, I had to learn to stop saying upstate because folks thought that was a half hour up there in Westchester or something. I was like, no, folks, we're talking a plane ride or a 6.5-hour drive. Grew up there, the only child of a single mother who had 10 years of sobriety when I was born, right? So this has been around. The program has been around in my life long before I needed it, as they say, you know. She is a single mother, and the story relates to AA because she was taking a meeting to an institution, and that is where she met my father. He got out of said institution, they became involved, had a kid, he didn't change his ways, saw him a handful of times, but on both sides of the tree there, and going far, far up the tree, the alcoholism and addiction is there. So there are a lot of folks that knew me better than I knew myself and still probably do, and like at least the way I work, right? Again, not the first time I've heard a story similar to that, but that's my experience, right? My childhood was perfectly fine. I will tell you that nothing I say is the reason I'm an alcoholic, right? None of the externals or the circumstances that I'm going to explain are why I ran into trouble or faced these challenges, you know? I was provided for certainly better than I can even imagine providing for as I'm starting to get to that stage of life, and it's a little daunting. Never had to go without any of that sort of stuff. I was, on paper, a pretty darn good kid, honestly. From the outside, for sure. Did quite well in school, like didn't lose a point on anything until like 10th grade after I missed like half of 9th grade going into a neurologist because I was dealing with crazy anxiety and depression, like perfectionism to the point of hospitalization, right? So excelled in sports and school and all the other stuff, behaved well and all that good stuff. Doesn't mean it was all happy and rosy, right? Like I said, ended up in the hospital for doing objectively good things. Was a chronic overdoer, and still am, right? The way I tick is still the same. It's just learning how to deal with that and channel it with help from others into healthier ways, right? So that was some of the stuff I dealt with when I was younger. My mom kept a journal of red flags, if you will, when I was growing up. Literally a journal of like evidence of cause for concern. And when I was in treatment, she brought it to me, and we read through that, and that was something special. And it just was what it was. That was the sort of environment. By the end of high school, started to dabble a little bit. Don't let me bury the lead by saying that my extended family, whom I'm not related to really, I consider my extended family in our sort of group, like where I go for holidays and always have, as my mom's AA folks from decades and decades ago, right? Their kids are my best friends. Those are the people we hang around with because this disease has impacted quite literally everyone in the family, and we don't deal with a lot of our actual blood relatives for that reason, and that just is the case. And I wouldn't really change it, to tell you the truth, right? So I had plenty of warnings. When I got to the teen years, into the beginning of when some people started to dabble with alcohol and other things, I hadn't even done anything that really caused concern. I was already getting sat down and getting the talkings to, right? And like I said, none of that made me an alcoholic or caused me to run into trouble. Started dabbling around like late high school, going to a party here and there. I wasn't allowed to play the super macho like football and lacrosse up there and hockey up there because of said single mother. She thought it was too dangerous, so we didn't do that. So I wasn't like the super cool kid. I was like maybe B-tier popularity, who was too smart to really be that cool and like tried too hard in school to really be that cool. But we had a few little parties, and I was pretty much all right. Like, it wasn't necessarily a right from the jump, was off to the rails and ran into trouble. And here's where the story really gets run-of-the-mill. It really happened when we got to college, right? When this very watchful and, by her own admission, overbearing mother was no longer around, right? Wasn't under her roof any longer, wasn't necessarily her rules. I was close enough that she would show up unannounced to the dorm rooms here and there just to see what was going on. So that those were great times. But man, when I was out of there, it was off to the races. Something deep down was clearly waiting to experiment a little further without that supervision. And boy, did we. Entered into the whole Greek life game pretty early in school. And that was just unlimited resources. I went to a school where I was not like most of the folks. They came from a lot of like outward opportunity and resources and those sort of things that I was not accustomed to. So man, this whole new group of friends I had had things that I could never even have dreamed of, and resources to get whatever the heck they wanted and really not face repercussions that we all should have very, very often. And that became dangerous rather quickly. For me, and it had, like I said, had nothing to do with these other people. This was absolutely of my doing, despite all the circumstances. But I was, when I got to college, a blackout drinker from the very first night and every single night thereafter, even when I tried to control it. And we got to that stage, as many of us do. And it didn't take long. It was a gut check for me the first Monday, right after that first weekend, sat in the mirror. Was like, oh boy, I'm not sure we're going to be able to do this forever. Like, it was that early on into what I would consider binge drinking, that there was something deep down that was saying, this might not be able to last forever, but let's see if we can get through these years, because this is what I'm supposed to be doing here. It wasn't even fun for that long. I was the aggressive drinker, didn't remember a darn thing. And within a matter of weeks, like not even a month, I was causing damage to property and the people around me and innocent bystanders, truthfully. And that's when it got real, obviously, right? For me, I've come to a point with help from the program to be able to understand and almost appreciate the type of drinker I was, because to me, it made it so it couldn't last that long. Something had to give or it was going to go one way or the other. So that's the type of drinker I was, right? Was armed with plenty of resources, and really didn't shy away from them. And I don't think that's just up in my mind thinking that I was doing the right thing. Started going to meetings after like a month of school, like during the day, just sneaking in between classes and going and stopping in. Be like, I'm kind of working this whole thing out. I come from a long line, so like this was daycare for me, these rooms. Like I'm used to the rooms, but working it out for myself now. And man, it's the only sort of place that is welcoming enough to be like, good, great, glad you're here. Like we'll work it out together. We'll feel it out. Right, then we did. As a group, not by myself, most importantly not by myself, because that's really what I want to talk about tonight, is kind of the crux of the first three steps, which were explained to me by one of these family friends, right? A father figure, really. As I can't is the first step, second step is he can, he, she, they, it can, and the third step is so let him. It was as simple as that. It was put as simple as that to me. And I think there's really something to be said about having some sort of grasp of those first three before you move on, right? I was not the gentleman that went through the steps in that day and a half, few days, and really just knocked them out. I've been through the steps a few times with a few different folks, whether it was back home, at school, in treatment, in D.C. at an internship, in the city of New York, that is, and now here. But it was never a quick burst for me. It was a lot of provided assignments, which is how I asked to be given and taken through the steps. And I say asked because I've learned to do that and only that in these rooms, is not say, this is the way it's going to be, this is how my recovery will be, because I'm not naive anymore to think that I know really anything. And to me, going to that extreme of, nope, like nothing. I got nothing. Someone please show me the way. I'd like to do it together. Going to that level of extreme is really the only way for me to do it, because if I let any sort of lack of humility and ego sneak in to think I know how my recovery should go, how my life should go, and how I should be doing anything, it becomes problematic rather quickly. It tailspins, and all of a sudden I'm back to taking the wheel, running the show, and all those other phrases that we talk about in here, right? So with that being said, right, I'd like to open up to page 30 of the book, if you guys got it with you. And I want to go through the first few pages more about alcoholism, talk about the spiritual experience in the back of the book, and then we'll take it from there. So on chapter 3, more about alcoholism, page 30, it picks up with... Is that even where I want to go? I'm sorry, bear with me. I'm sorry, I'd like to go to page 44. I got too many sticky notes from different groups. I'd like to go to page 44, We Agnostics, and start talking about now, after these years of trying to deal with and learning from others about what the crux of the problem may be, armed with some facts about myself from others, what are we doing about it? What is the solution rooted in, right? So chapter 4, page 44. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism, right? I like that word, something. Not all about alcoholism. I don't claim to know absolutely everything about the disease, because that would be my blind spot and that's where it would get me. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic, right? That was incredibly important. And here are the two different things that, right from the book, make an alcoholic. The first is, if, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely. Again, operative word there to me is entirely, because there were absolutely bouts that were imposed on me of, yes, you can come to this event, but no, you can't drink, or you can have one, or you can have two. Sometimes it was others putting that rule on me, sometimes it was myself, but the operative word is entirely. And to me, that doesn't even mean for a period of time, that means indefinitely, because I made it a night here and there, believe it or not. And then two, if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. So that second one, if you have little control over the amount you take, right? It's too easy for me, reading this book alone, to qualify myself out based on the wording, which is why I said it was so important to read this with someone else or with a group or at a study. Because in my earlier days, I would read that and say, little control of the amount I take. I have probably moderate control of the amount I take, I would have said in first 6 months, year. I can control it. We're all right. So those are the qualifiers it's saying right in the book. That's what makes an alcoholic. You can't quit entirely when you want to, and you have little control over the amount you take. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Period. Should be an exclamation point to me, because I love the wording in this book, because it's all over the place. There's not really a lot of room for debate in that sentence to me. You may be suffering from an illness, but if you decide, and for me that was if I decide, and it's only going to work if I decide and wholeheartedly believe that I'm an alcoholic and something needs to change. So once we got to that point, only a spiritual experience will conquer. Period. Okay, that's pretty cut and dry for me. I like the parts of the book that are like that. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Right? And that's sort of an interesting sentence again. When provided those two options, if one is a true alcoholic, the options are be doomed to an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis. It seems like a pretty easy choice, doesn't it? But like it says in the first few chapters before this, and like I tried to explain in my quick qualification there, that's part of the mystery of alcoholism to me, is when provided some easy choices, right? To drink when I know it will absolutely not be a good time and like there's nothing to the contrary, or to just not, and maybe things will be all right. I chose to drink every time when I was deciding for myself, right? So that same decision is here. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Right there, I like how it mentions after a while. Because, right, I don't have a tremendous amount of experience sponsoring folks, but even from my own experience and the few sponsors I have had, it's that that mystery of after a while, right? That those are some of the questions that I had and I've gotten from sponsees is, like, how do I know when I've hit my bottom, right? Like, how long does it take to become thoroughly convinced? Because, like I said, becoming thoroughly convinced is what has to happen in 1, 2, and 3 before there's really any possibility of anything catching on and actual traction getting made to me. So that's one of those mysteries to me, is what does it take? And it's a mystery because there's really not a concrete answer, right? The bottoms in any room in AA vary tremendously. The good news is, and what folks told me when I came in, is you don't have to see the elevator all the way to the bottom because there will be a lower one. And ultimately, just to go back a half step, that was kind of my experience. I don't know, right? Don't need to compare. I need to identify. But I was probably somewhere in like the upper bottom alcoholic, right? I had plenty of the not yets. But if anyone looks hard enough, we can all find plenty of the not yets, no matter how bad it was. But what did it for me and what made me thoroughly convinced is going into the treatment center I did, making friends with the folks that were there, which was not expected, but I got buddy-buddy with these folks before I knew the things they were capable of and had done, right? I found folks that were a lot like me from all sorts of different backgrounds, and some of them had gone a little further down the scale than I thought I could, right? They had the DUIs, they had the long bouts of incarceration, whatever. and I became very friendly with them, saw a lot of similarities, and that was kind of my first spiritual experience, is becoming thoroughly convinced that if something didn't change, I would be precisely in their shoes. I had absolutely no doubt the circumstances they were in is where I'd be in, who knows, 6 months, a year, somewhere. But having that experience of, oh yeah, like, something's got to change, or I am wholeheartedly convinced I will be right where those folks are, and experience a lot of stuff that all of a sudden I can't come back from, right? There were a few of those, but being convinced it was going to get worse was absolutely massive. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you, but cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. Right at this point, we're getting back to the only solution is a spiritual experience. So we're getting through the whole, what if you don't think you can accomplish that spiritual experience, or you have some sort of predisposition that precludes you from being able to have one? So they're saying, hey, quick, before you close the book and run out the door, give us another minute. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. Right? Just trying to have a better philosophy and a better code of morals, just trying to be a better person, in the experience of the writers of the book, didn't do it. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. Right? It's not a matter of trying, necessarily. The white knuckling that I went through, and I have heard a lot of people have gone through, didn't do it. Just trying harder wasn't necessarily the solution. And that's something my mom always says, right? And it sometimes pains me to give her a little bit of credit. But she was always, I'd overhear her on the phone saying, don't try harder. Why don't you try different? And that's that, right? It's a good one. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Again, the language is fairly cut and dry. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Lack of human power, as it said right above. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. And I had that underlined and an arrow pointing out to that sentence before it, because that's a pretty profound sentence to me. Okay, so the entirety of the book, you just told me, is about where and how to find a power greater than ourselves. Right? On the surface, that was a little strange to me. I thought this book was about either learning how to drink safely and moderately, how to moderate my drinking, or at least about how to like control alcoholism and how to get past it. But it doesn't even say anything about alcohol in that sentence, right? Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be a spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God, right? They don't mince words. Okay, here it comes. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. Truth to my experience is that I did not have many predispositions as far as religion was concerned, because the spiritual adjacent stuff that I grew up with was my mother and our AA family's conceptions of a higher power, right? So on that front, I consider myself incredibly lucky to not really have had any formal religion of any sort. So, oh, okay, like when I came down to it there and my sponsor said, what do you want your higher power to be? Shy of saying, I have no idea, I was like, I feel like I know the answer. I might just know the answer. Like, my mom talks to the birds, so that could be it. Maybe that's what we're doing here. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him with which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. We look upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. We looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it at all? And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet in other moments, we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. And I think on that front, I can relate a lot more, right? Shy of the actual more formal religious beliefs, I can hear that thought, and I can relate to, all right, like, if there is, in fact, some sort of supreme being, then, like, why does bad stuff happen, period? Like, what's that all about? That one I can relate to. And the good news is we're going to continue on and learn why those thoughts are natural and by certainly no means prevent us from being able to find the spiritual solution we're talking about. Yes, we of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. And I wish I had taken the time to pick out some of the quotes that are ringing in my head right now. But that paragraph, right? There's a lot of wording after it talks about the task of and the process of finding a higher power, about how it doesn't need to be quite as concrete, perhaps, as some of us may have thought, right? It says somewhere that the only thing that we cannot have is belligerent denial. Like, it phrases it in a few different areas of the only thing needed to form a beginning, right, paraphrasing, that's all I can't have. I don't have to have anything written down. I don't have to be able to draw a portrait of this higher power. I just can't be so hard-headed to think that I am the only thing and the supreme being. And that's what it says. And like I said, I wish I could point you to it, and I'm sure some of you guys can. But that was an easier and much more manageable way of the phrasing for me to understand. Okay, so all I got to do to be able to move forward is say that I ain't it. Like, I'm not going to pretend to know it, and I have to believe that I don't know it. I can't just say it. I have to actually, to my core, understand that I do not run the world. That's a little bit more manageable to me. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. So all that stuff about me pointing to my mom who talked to the birds, or my uncle who journals every night and burns it, I didn't have to do that. That was also comforting. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contract with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, again, now we're getting more manageable. All we have to do is admit the possible existence, not full belief, admit the possible existence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things. We began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. So this alone is not it. We found that God does not make too hard turns with those who seek him, right? So we don't need a perfect conception. We have to take other steps, and we have to seek him. That action of seeking starts to come up. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. When, therefore, we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God, right? Talking to folks that have a massive problem with this off the ledge a little bit. This applies, too, to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was, right? All that is needed to commence the process of carrying out the steps. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. One short question, quite manageable, all right. That question is, do I now believe or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this spiritual cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. So with that, we'll go to the asterisk, taking us to the spiritual experience. In the back of the book at page 567, and we'll go through that page and a half, and then that should be the end of my reading. So picking up spiritual experience, 567. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change, I have that underlined, sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism, has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences, so they are one and the same, can be used interchangeably, must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself, just like a lot of folks were aware of the difference when we had crossed over the lines of real alcoholic long before we were ourselves. That was my experience. I was the last one to know, as they say in a lot of these rooms. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have become accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Right? So we talked about the importance of having a spiritual experience, that being the only solution to the problem that we have. And to me, this appendix is sort of talking about in greater detail the nature of that experience, that it does not need to be some white light. Doesn't need to be. If it is, more power to you. That also works. But this is explaining to me that when they say pure spiritual experience, it means personality change. To me, that was easier to grasp. And it also doesn't have to happen overnight or even more so in a single instance. Most emphatically, nice emphasis, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. Nice, we got to that point where I can now officially point to the belligerent denial. Who knew that I already had it flagged? We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. And then the quote from Herbert Spencer to conclude is, "There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation." So that's all we'll read. I'll talk for a few more minutes. And I want to mention that those three indispensables, right? Because early on in the recovery journey for me, right? The first folks that went out of their way to try and help me before I was even asking for it, again, were these mostly male father figures of sorts that were like family adjacent. And one of them always used to talk about the HOW, right? The honesty, the open-mindedness, and the willingness as being the indispensables and precisely what had to happen for any change to take hold, right? There's really a lot of qualifiers, things that have to happen if there is any chance at any of this program working. And not only did I hear it from these folks, and then when I came into the rooms on my own accord, outside of folks that I knew, to my chagrin, I heard the exact same sort of messaging. It wasn't made up, just getting pumped into me by folks I considered family. It was very all-encompassing, right, and coming from a lot of different angles. So, right, those are the things that had to happen: the willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness. And on this same token of the options, like the broad, all-inclusive, roomy realm of the spirit, right? The options for coming up with this power greater than ourselves. This same gentleman had a lot of acronyms for the G.O.D., right? Particularly catered to the folks that had those predispositions and didn't like the God word, right? Whether it was the good orderly direction or what have you. There's a lot of different things that a lot of different people use. And in my experience, I've seen a lot of different conceptions work. And I think I have even more so a different one than maybe anyone else does. And that's sort of a... right, not to sound corny, but a beautiful thing is that there's really a lot more options than may initially meet the eye. Another part about the spiritual experience that I think is very important, or at least it was to me, was that what I touched on before and what essentially we're talking about here is that there's not a one-size-fits-all. Again, not only can the higher power be catered to and whatever someone thinks, as long as they are not in belligerent denial and it's not them. Those are pretty much the rules as far as higher powers are concerned, as far as I understand them. But even beyond that, the spiritual experience that is necessary to go about and have any hope of taking on alcoholism and achieving recovery is something that doesn't have to be a white light. And in other words, is really a personality change, because that one hit me right on the head when that was explained to me. And the explanation was people showing the differences between when I was drinking and when I wasn't. And it was. I was always a completely different person, right? Again, not unique in the slightest, which was a bummer at first because the ego didn't love that, but welcome when it was understood. To understand that there were people that were like me here that had achieved success in this program, that was pretty darn comforting. But the personality change, right? I explained sort of about the whole situation when I was growing up. On paper, great kid. Same sort of deal when I wasn't drinking. People could see I had a good heart. I was a pretty decent guy, at least. And then it was the classic switch that flipped, right? And no one could predict how, when, the only thing that we knew for sure, that alcohol was involved. But when that switch was going off, no one was quite sure. And it was pretty hairy because I was drinking all the time for 2.5 to 3 years. And somehow trying to do all these other things, right? Come into adulthood, live on my own, try and go to classes and like achieve school and try and figure out what the occupation and career down the line were going to look like. The priorities were just out of whack, and that's what it was. And it's interesting to think about the fact that that wasn't a choice, because right before where we started reading, in more about alcoholism in the chapters before it, it talks about other descriptions and definition of the alcoholic, and one of those is they have lost any sort of choice or control over drink, right? I guess I'm a little early there, but the summary of kind of session one, right, was sort of skimming through how I became, with help from others, emphasis on help from others over and over and over, help from others, not alone, how I became armed with some sort of facts about myself, because I think that was obviously incredibly important to achieving any progress, was knowing what was going on and, importantly, how dire it was, because it really was a life or death situation. But after that, getting into the only thing and the nature of the solution and that is a spiritual solution. And the good news is that it doesn't need to be anything for folks to scoff at. And there are a ton of reasons why folks might be able to think that it's not going to work for them, isn't going to be a one-size-fits-all, or the spiritual life isn't a life for them. And then I thought it was just important to touch on the plethora of areas in which folks are encouraged to keep an open mind, understand that all that's needed to get a start is to not be in a state of belligerent denial and be willing to believe. That's it. I thought that was an important sort of first step, really 1, 2, and 3. But to me, that's what happened before any progress was made whatsoever. So I think I'll wrap it there for tonight. And I'm looking, obviously, forward to hearing from you folks. So with that, thanks.